The Ink column in the Chicago Tribune today suggested that Paul McGrath may be on his way out of Mayor Byrne's inner circle. Tonight on Inside Politics, we'll talk about that possibility with the man on the spot, and we'll take a close-up look at the mayor's bid for re-election. Good evening, everybody. I'm Bruce Dumont. Welcome to another Thursday night edition of Inside Politics, where this evening we will be focusing our attention on city politics with my guests, who are Paul McGrath, political advisor to Mayor Jane Byrne, where he is working on her re-election bid. He is a former Chicago Sun-Times reporter who helped mastermind her upset victory over Michael Blahnik in 1979. He is also a former columnist for Chicago Magazine. Also joining us tonight is an old friend, David Axelrod, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune and host of his own radio program called Talking Headlines, Sunday night on WXRT. Our telephone number is 372-0500, 372-0500. If you want to talk politics this evening, again, our focus is city politics tonight. Lots happened this past week, and again, there was kind of an interesting item, as I alluded to in the beginning, in the Chicago Tribune in the Ink column today. And let me quote it for those who have not read, and then we'll let the man on the middle or man on the spot react to that item. New news. Is campaign strategist Paul McGrath, in his second tour with Jane Byrne, in trouble? Question mark. Old news. Doesn't he have a contract with Byrne? Question mark. Paul, when you read the paper today, they have a nice picture of you, so that must have caught your eye as you looked at the Trib this morning. What was your reaction when you read the item?
Well, I like the picture, as you pointed out, but I think reports of my demise are premature, to say the least. I think also you have to consider the source. The item is undoubtedly written by a longtime political opponent of mine, Mike Sneed, who has the column. I think that her having the column and the fact that her husband is a, what you might call an influence peddler, is a probably the most corrupt conflict of interest I'm aware of in the history of American journalism. He's got an office across the street where he takes money from people and to put things in the paper, and his wife has got a column in the Chicago Tribune to accommodate it.
Geez, Dad, I don't know. Want to react to that?
I have nothing to do with the Ink column, and I have enough trouble staying out of trouble myself. So I can't speak for the column. I have a hard time believing that anyone is taking money to see items in the Tribune, and I know that there's some long-standing enmity between Paul and Bill Griffin, who is the guy referred to here. So I would say that this sort of thing that's in the column this morning is something that's been said by other people, but I also know that City Hall is the biggest rumor mill in the world, and that on any given day, any given person is on his way in or out. And so I've learned not to put too much credence in any of these items, even if they come from what I consider credible sources.
Well, the knives are always out in City Hall, and the backstabbing goes on. That's part of the fun. That's why we like it so much, you know. So these things always happen.
But I think we're on radio, so people can't see Paul cleaning his teeth with his switchblade here.
But I think, but as I said, examining the issue on the merits, the conflict of interest involved in having a organization machine functionary in the PR business across the street on Michigan Avenue from Tribune Tower and his wife running a column like this are just perfectly clear to everybody. Let me say that in the last few days there was an item in that column that might have been perplexing to some people. The item said that they put new plants in at O'Hare Airport. Well, I mean, it's not too newsy. I can't imagine who might care. But the fact is that Sneed's husband, Griffin, has a contract with the airport, and he's paid to promote the airport. And it's the kind of a thing, I can't imagine a self-respecting newspaper having an arrangement like this. Basil Talbot, in his column, has referred to it kind of obliquely. He mentioned that the column is, he didn't mention it by name, but he said the column from the other paper, is financed by City Hall. And it really is.
Let me just ask one follow-up, and then David's got a comment as well. What about the relationship that you had? I mentioned that you used to be with the Sun-Times. You helped mastermind Jane Byrne's election. You were real close to the mayor, and then you left, and you went to work for Chicago Magazine, where you were a columnist, while your wife remained on the payroll as director of special events for the city of Chicago. Is that not a conflict of interest between a city department head and a representative of a major media organization in the city of Chicago?
Well, I think it should be looked at closely, that's for sure. But first of all, as they say in City Hall, there was no fiduciary. There was nobody around collecting money.
Well, you must hang around with a different group in City Hall than I do. I've never heard that word before.
Well, I have. In any case, nobody was taking money from anybody in a PR aspect. I think that also I don't think that you can compare a monthly column, a long column, an essay form column, with a gossip column in a daily newspaper. I mean, it just isn't the same at all.
But isn't the principle the same?
No. Well, let me put it this way. I where I came from in that situation was perfectly public. It was on the front pages of all the newspapers. I didn't publish blind items, you know, things about people and so forth. I wrote logical essays which either stood or fell on their merits. But I was very careful in what I wrote to... first of all, during that period, I stayed away from the people I knew in City Hall because I didn't want to put anybody on the spot, didn't want to have any kind of conflict. And I was very careful about the things that I wrote about so that there wouldn't be any kind of appearance of impropriety.
Well, I'm just I'm interested because of the source of what's being said here. I've heard these kinds of things said before, but the point is that, Paul, that you're a political operative. For you talk about City Hall as if City Hall has a life of its own and that Jane Byrne isn't part of it. Bill Griffin does have a contract to promote O'Hare, to put out a newsletter, $35,000 a year, but he got it with the sponsorship of the Byrne administration. He does sit on the RTA board, but he got it through the appointment of Mayor Byrne. His partner is on the CTA board, but he got that appointment from Mayor Byrne. So what you're saying, in effect, is that this influence peddler is peddling influence with the knowledge and consent and the aid and assistance of the woman you're promoting for re-election. And I don't understand that. Maybe
that's
you can explain.
That's not what I said. I addressed myself to the ethics of the newspaper. Now, the newspapers like to hold themselves above the rest of us and judge everyone else and fit the universe of human experience into their spectrum and hold themselves apart. They behave in a manner as though they have a monopoly on virtue. I was addressing myself to the conflict of interest of the Tribune in fostering this situation.
I understand.
I'm not debating that point. I don't have anything to do with this.
If
you want to say something about what you just said, go ahead.
What I'm asking you, though, is you describe Griffin as an influence peddler, but the influence he's peddling is influence with the administration that you're promoting for re-election. If you're disturbed by that, have you brought it to the attention of the mayor, and what's her response?
I directed myself to the question of the Tribune column, which I think is an outrageous conflict of interest, as far as I know, unprecedented in American journalism.
You've made that point
about three times. The question that Dave is asking, and I think it's a legitimate question, you are close to the mayor. You are one of those who is instrumental at the moment, unless it can be proven to the contrary, of helping to engineer her reelection. You admit to that. Okay. Also, Bill Griffin is also allegedly close to the mayor. Now, what we have here is a situation is one person who's close to the mayor who has received an appointment to the RTA board and a variety of other favors from Mayor Byrne spreading a rumor about your possible demise. Now, again, if you're the boss in charge, I mean, we have a similar situation that we do in Washington between Alexander Haig and Richard Allen. Is there guerrilla-type warfare being waged against you here?
No, this is just the kind of thing that always goes on in City Hall, like David said. This goes on constantly.
But have you spoken to the mayor about it? When you read this morning,
This is endemic to the situation. You have to laugh about it. You know, it's just one of those things that happens.
How do you fight back? You don't have a column anymore.
Well, I don't. I'm not in the habit of doing that. I mean, but it's just those things happen.
I'm just, we're talking about two different things here, and you've made your point about the Tribune and the column, and I'm here as a reporter, and I don't make policy at the Tribune. I don't decide who has columns and who doesn't have columns, and I can't speak, but what I'm intrigued by is that you say with some contempt, and I think it's consistent with things you've said all as long as I've known you, there's influence peddling going on across the street from City Hall, and the influence peddler you're talking about, if he is in fact an influence peddler, and I'm not saying he is or he isn't, as someone connected with the administration you're promoting. And I find it inconsistent to be promoting an administration that is supporting, if in fact the administration is supporting influence peddling. It seems inconsistent.
You know, every level of every government has to contain people of all kinds. And the secret of governing means that you have to deal with power as it exists, not the way you'd like it to be, and you have to deal with everyone. I mean, that's the principle of civilized government, that we use methods other than violence to bring together the interests of society. And so I'm not here tonight to make up a list of all of the people that are involved in city government that someone may or may not have a grudge against. I addressed myself strictly because we started out talking about this column, and my comments were directed to the column. And I don't think we got to waste any more time on
it. I want to just move a little additional background because you alluded to it earlier. And before we went on the air, we talked about that. You and I were talking about how you first met Jane Byrne. You were covering her as a reporter, and you got to know her, and she asked you to come and assist her in her campaign, at which time you left the paper and did that. You were working for the Sun-Times at the time. A similar thing was occurring across the street at the Tribune when a young reporter, Bill Griffin, had met her on a story and had covered her, and they also struck up a relationship, and he ultimately left the Tribune and also helped in the campaign. As her press secretary. Where did the two of you split, or were you never close?
Well, Bill and I were never that close. We had only met a few times. And the only place we split was that he avowedly decided to go after my job, and quite successfully so. I mean, that's what happened. I don't, you know, it's one of those things.
Okay. You then, let me paraphrase what happened, or let me paint the picture and you tell me where I'm wrong. Okay, you realized he went after the job. The mayor at the time did not stand up for you. You got ticked off. You left. You went to write a column for the Chicago Magazine. Your wife, Karen Connor, remained on the staff and is loyal to the administration to this day. And pressure was on her during this time as to, you know, whether how long she was going to stay. Her future was in doubt for several months and discussed publicly in the media. So you left. Then you came back. What happened to make you come back?
Well, I saw that a place that I could serve, that I could be useful, that, you can talk about the range of people that are in city government, and if all the people who consider themselves to be decent and want to just stay away from it because there's some nasty people there, then you abandon the field of battle to those people. And I saw an area that I could work in, support the mayor, who I've really always had tremendous respect for,
did you have respect
fight for
during,
things I believe
did you
in.
Have respect during the time when she allowed Bill Griffin to run around your end and get the job that you once had?
Well,
how did you feel about that?
Well, you can't. You know, you get some knocks and those things happen, but you can't expect anyone to fight your battles for you. That isn't the way it works. The mayor of Chicago can't be going around making it her business to fight all the battles for the 42,000 employees and all of the other people who are associated with the city government. You have to stand or fall on your own.
What was said back then, Paul, is that Griffin essentially got along better with the people who one has to deal with at City Hall, that he had better lines of communication, and that was his chief selling point. Do you buy that?
No, I don't think so. I think it was a knife job that's done on people. It's done all the time. And people who said that never asked me about it. There are all kinds of people in city government, and federal government that have all kinds of talents, abilities, and so forth, and some may be different than others. What happened at that time was this. I saw what was happening. At that particular time, I had made up my mind that I was not going to get involved in that kind of struggling and fighting and so forth. And I knew exactly what was going on, and I chose not to take a countervailing position.
I mentioned in the introduction that you were one of the masterminds that helped get Jane Byrne elected. You're now one of those who is responsible for getting her reelected. If you are successful a second time, Jane Byrne is going to owe you twice. Some will say that she will even owe you more because now she has something to lose, where the first time she had nothing to lose and it was just a lark that turned out to be successful. If Jane Byrne is reelected, do you expect Paul McGrath to move back into the administration into a high position with the type of armor that would not allow anyone to stab you in the back again?
There's no such armor, let me tell you that.
But would you expect?
I have had opportunities to be actually inside the city government since then, and I haven't chosen to go in that direction. You can never choose what the future holds. As far as Mayor Byrne owing me anything, I don't think you can think that way at all. I don't think she owes me anything. I think people do what they want to do because they want to do it and because they conceive of it as being in their own best interest to do so. And that's what motivates people. So I don't think...
Well, money motivates people, too, when you're being paid well.
Yeah.
With a contract.
I think,
is your contract?
I think
up?
All the people at this table are paid well, but that doesn't...
Not all.
I don't think that...
see my check.
I don't think that...
No, I was talking about mine.
there's plenty of ways you could make more money. My contract runs until May of 83.
Do you... I agree with you that there's no point in dwelling on this, but, there are a lot of people who were saying what was in the newspaper this morning, and one of the things that was said was that there was some resentment or there was some dispute over whether it was wise to give an interview to Channel 2 about the whole re-election operation, the one in which you showed your charts and graphs and game plan.
You can use anything as ammunition against someone. If you choose if someone chooses to do that, they can do so. But there was nothing in that interview. That interview helped our position. We got calls from volunteers that wanted to join. I think it's good to be. There was a time, from a tactical point of view. I started putting this organization together a year ago. At that time, and for a considerable amount of time afterwards, it wasn't to our interest to advertise what we were doing. So I kept a low profile, and people asked what I was doing. I said I was writing a few speeches or something. But I think that time is long past, and I think that now it is in our interest to be more public about things. And so I don't know who may have said that, but you can.
Are you in charge over there? Who's running the operation? I know Al Ronan is over there.
Al works for me, and it's my office.
Mm-hmm. Who else works over there?
At this point, the only other full-time employee is a secretary. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of volunteers. We have some consultants. We have, in effect, a full campaign organization. If the election was now instead of a year from now, we'd be ready.
Would you win?
I think we will win. I think the mayor will win.
Would you win if it was held right now?
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. No, there's no question about it. The mayor's standing in the polls has approximately doubled in the last year.
What is the issue that's turned it around? Or has it just been the public perception of her as a leader?
I think you've put your finger on it. I think it's the public perception of her as a leader has... it takes a long time. I think that the mayor is in the early stage of what will be... come to be viewed as a great historical figure. And when any such figure enters the scene, it takes a long time for people to adapt. And it's questionable, whether people are going to adapt. And I think as time goes on, people see the qualities in her that they trust. And so I think that that's what's happening.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Richard Daley is going to be the opponent for Mayor Byrne?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that he intends to. One of the people that's very close to him made a statement over the weekend to someone that he's definitely going to make the race. I don't think there's any question of his intent. I think that from a tactical point of view, you know, if in February of last year, February of this year actually, Mayor Koch in New York had a 62% standing in the polls. It turned out they couldn't find anybody to run against him, except a token opposition. The mayor's support is now approaching that level, and I think will go higher in the next few months. And the realities of the situation will determine what any prospective opponent decides to do. And there's questions about support. There's questions about fundraising. And there's many tactical questions that remain. But I don't think there's any question. I think that he obviously has strong support from many people that are telling him that to do it. He has a very large ward organization, which amounts to mouths to feed. And he can't do anything for these people right now. He can't tell the people to wait 5-6 years and maybe he'll run and do something for them then. So I think there are tremendous forces pushing him in that direction. And if it's feasible, then he will do it.
Are these your personal polls that, obviously ones you've commissioned that show the mayor's public standing, her popularity approaching 62%. What is this figure?
No, it's the latest complete poll that we had showed her job approval rating at 57%. So I say it's approaching the level that Koch had.
But and you say it's more than doubled since.
It was last December. It was approximately 30%.
Don't you think? Something struck me when I saw you there in that room with all those. Awesome tools of politics that the public might be saying, that there was a possibility of a David and Goliath campaign such as the one that took place in 1979, except this time you guys will be Goliath and someone else will be David because you'll be spending so much money and using so many tools that people will say, this isn't a fair fight.
Well, actually, I think in that particular story, Mike Flannery did the story, and he chose to dwell on those aspects. Actually, the things we do are the things that most of the top politicians do in the modern day, and it's new for Democratic organization politics in Chicago, but it's not really anything out of the ordinary. Candidates do have polls, and they do have the best polls they can get. Governor Thompson has polls constantly done on everything.
I can't perceive Rich Daley as ever being perceived as little David.
I think
that's what happened in 1980. I think that he consciously fostered that image.
Yeah,
of
sure.
Being
and
an
I think he continues
think he
to
he
do
again.
So. Sure, I think he continues to do so. And I think this is just the basic situation of an incumbent and a challenger, which is built in, and this is the way it is. People jockey for the position of underdog.
That's particularly true in the city of Chicago, though, where there's such enormous power at City Hall, as witnessed by the fact that Jane Byrne can raise $2.5 million in one night, and that I suspect Rich Daley is having a little trouble raising money because there are people who don't want to choose up sides at this point.
Let me say this,
with
regard to the $2.5 million that she raised, she's a good fundraiser, and the reporters like to cast
to say the
this.
Least.
The reporters like to cast this sometimes in terms of arm twisting and so forth, but. There's really very, very little of that. People
want to give up their money to go to those dinners and sit.
Well, listen, I'll tell you,
we had a
VIP lounge at that fundraiser, and the people were climbing all over each other. A very high class of gatecrasher there, let me tell you. Nobody was twisting their arms to do that. I can't believe that in the days before campaign disclosure laws, in the days before the party had the kind of division that it did, when we had one man who was the mayor and the party chairman, and when it was not uncommon for people to come into every politician and give them envelopes full of cash that were not beholden to be reported anywhere. It's difficult for me to think that Mayor Daley didn't raise more than Jane Byrne raised.
That's something we'll never know, and you're doing your job, and I appreciate that by casting this in the best light. The fact is that there are a lot of people out there in City Hall and a lot of contractors who will tell you that the pressure was at least as intense, if not more intense, under these last three dinners. And of course, she's the first mayor to hold an annual dinner on the scale that she's holding one. Most people who aren't candidates don't hold dinners on that scale every year.
Mayor
she's raised over $5 million already.
Well, Mayor Daley had three campaign organizations plus his own 11th Ward organization, and all of them raised money every year. So I don't think that this is unprecedented at all. But incidentally, when we were talking about the polling and so forth, and I mentioned every politician does it, a few months ago there was a article on the, I don't know, it was some period of time that Daley had been in office as state's attorney. And this is a good story. You might be able to track this down. And it was in the Sun-Times, your competitor.
Sun-Times is probably listening. They're gonna get a half-hour head start on it, David.
And they asked Daley whether he was doing any polling, and he said no, he wasn't. And furthermore said that none was being done in his behalf. Well, I happen to know that that's untrue, and he was not telling the truth. And so I think some reporter might be able to track that down, that if there was polling done and he denies it and
well,
says
I'm
there
for
wasn't,
full disclosure then, of all polls. I want to look at his and yours
then
and everybody's.
Then who was doing it and where did the money come from? And in what fashion was it reported?
I
want to
say
reported?
Once.
Let me just mention the phone number. Our phone number is 372-0500. This is Inside Politics. We're coming to you from WBEZ Radio in Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. And joining us this evening, David Axelrod, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune and host of Talking Headlines, his own political talk show, Sunday nights on WXRT. Paul McGrath also joins us. He is political advisor to Mayor Jane Byrne, where he is currently busy working for the last year. He has been working on her reelection bid. He is a former reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times who helped mastermind Mayor Jane Byrne's victory over Michael Blahnik in 1979, and he was with the administration for a period of time, left to become a columnist for Chicago Magazine, and then went back on the payroll, the political payroll, to help in her reelection bid. 372-0500, we're talking about city politics this evening. If you have any questions or comments about Jane Byrne's reelection bid or her role as mayor, do give us a call. 372-0500. Dave Axelrod.
Yeah, I just want to make a couple of points about the fundraising aspect of the Jane Byrne operation. I agree with Paul. I don't think that what goes on there is unprecedented. I think, in fact, that it's very traditional, the kind of fundraising that's done at City Hall, no different except perhaps on a larger scale. But there are interesting things that show up by virtue of those campaign disclosure reports. For example, in 1980, there was an accounting firm named Laventhal and Horwath that donated more to the mayor's dinner than any other firm, $25,000, more than any other person. As a matter of fact, they hadn't had city business before 1980, in the last several years before that. In the few months after they donated $25,000, they got over $250,000 in accounting contracts, including one accounting contract that was taken away from another Big Eight accounting firm in the middle of an O'Hare audit and given to Laventhal and Horwath. Now, you may suggest that there's no connection, but I think that that's, you know, I think the public won't buy that. Now, I also, as I make that point, I want to say, as I said at the beginning of it, that I think that that is something that's gone on for a long time, and it's something that Jane Byrne brought up in her campaign because she was the one who said that she would never give a contract to a firm or a business that had donated more than $1,000 to her campaign. And then as that rule fell by the wayside, we were told by her press secretary, then Press Secretary Jay McMullen, that inflation had forced them to abandon that rule. The other point I wanted to make was something.
Well, wait, let me say that I don't have any familiarity with that situation whatsoever. But I think it's very dangerous to make ergo hoc, whatever, propter hoc arguments. In other words, you can look at a two or three facts and put them together and try to make a cause and effect relationship.
You started the show by drawing some strange links between
essence of my comments would stand or fall on the merits, whether or not that column ever wrote anything about me. I think if you asked a representative group of newspaper editors in the United States whether they would countenance such an arrangement, I'd be awfully surprised if you could find any that would. It used to be kind of common among smaller little newspapers in Chicago. There was some very notorious...
Even large ones. There's a columnist who still works for the Sun-Times who had a city contract for his exterminating business for years. I don't think it exists any longer. But
was it Arbitech?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to ask the listeners...
Sort of like the Learner newspaper.
Why don't we ask the listeners out there? I don't know. You have the number. I don't remember what it is.
372-0500.
I'd be interested to know if people think that it is jumping to conclusions to say that there may be some connection between the fact that this firm donated $25,000 to the mayor's campaign and ended up with 10 times that in contracts within a matter of months from city government. I'd be interested to know if people think that was coincidental, because maybe it was, and maybe I am drawing, you know, unfair conclusions here.
I don't think what people may think. There's a set of facts, whatever they are. I don't have them. I don't think you have them. And I don't think many people do.
The other point I wanted to make was I do think she's doing much better. I think she had bottomed out a year ago after that Daley Burke election, which I think was a very damaging election for Burns. Since then, she's stayed out of those kind of things. She's lowered her public profile. She's not fighting with people as much. She's addressing herself to public problems and staying out of politics.
She's not as accessible to the press.
Right, she's not as accessible to the press,
no,
and frankly,
press
that's a good strategic decision on her part. And I think for all those reasons, I don't think it's any issue that has made her more popular. I think it's the lack of issues that has made her more popular in the last year.
Let us turn to some telephone calls now. 372-0500 if you have questions for Dave Axelrod of the Chicago Tribune or Paul McGrath of Mayor Burns' reelection campaign, do give us a call. 372-0500. Good evening, Jack. You're on the air.
Yes, I don't think that there is a lack of issues in this campaign that Mayor Byrne appears to be doing better in. I think there are different kinds of issues. The mayor has been speaking on both sides of her mouth in terms of wanting to reduce the city payroll and putting people, political favorites on the payroll, like this recent appointment of the alderman who was recently appointed to the Departments of Streets and Sanitation with no experience in
Alderman
the area.
Alderman
Cuda? Pardon me?
Alderman Cuda.
Yes.
Former Alderman Cuda.
Right.
Commissioner Cuda. No.
And, I mean, this is demagoguery. I mean, the mayor is...
All right,
it's politics as usual.
All right, let's let Paul McGrath respond to your point. Okay, Paul?
Well, I think that if you say politics as usual, there is a sense in which there is nothing new in political life, in governing. And but if you talk so severely and I think thoughtlessly about something like demagoguery or things, statistically it is a fact. The mayor has reduced the city payroll by something like 4% in the last couple of years. If in the papers tomorrow morning there'll be stories about several hundred more jobs being eliminated in cutbacks in efforts to economize and live within the means of the city budget. So I don't think that your point is well taken.
I'm interested in this 4% figure. We may be making news here. Where does that figure come from? Because I know that several aldermen and reporters as well have had a hard time getting the figure of number of employees on the payroll currently from the budget department. And if you have that figure, you'd be doing us a service by releasing it now.
Well, to tell you the truth, I think I got it from an editorial in either the Sun-Times or the Tribune in the past few days.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's been a...
No, I'm quite certain of it. I'm absolutely certain
and,
of it.
And the cutback...
As a matter of fact,
it was in the
Sun-Times, and it might have been as recently as this morning. And what they argued was that there should be 10%, and they gave her credit for having 4% reduction. But it was either this morning or yesterday. It was
well,
quite recent.
That figure has been requested over and over again, so I'd be interested to know, you know.
Well, it was in the paper, so.
Okay, Jack, we've got
Can
to move on.
Can I make a closing comment?
Yeah, one closing, then we got to move. Go ahead.
All right. The fact that the mayor has been cutting back possibly needed positions and making useless appointments, like the one I referred to, is to her disservice. And we threw out the last former mayor for his style of politics and as usual and elected Jane Byrne as an alternative by a strong coalition of various interested Chicago people, and we will do it again.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move on to our next call. Richard, good evening. You're on the air.
I want to ask a question. Michael Madigan drew a miraculous plan that was approved by the district court.
Right. He's going to Democrats heaven for that map.
I'd like to ask Paul McGrath how he thinks the mayor's ward plan will fare.
Well, as apparently the ward plan will go into effect without any opposition. It seems to be a good map, aside from the fact that whenever you make a new map, there's somebody's ox is going to be gored.
I thought black aldermen were going to court on that map.
Yeah, but isn't it true that there will be a court suit on the 17?
I think some people have talked about that, but to my knowledge, none has been filed.
Yeah, well, there is a discussion among some aldermen, Tim Evans and a few other black aldermen organizations like the Urban League. Kelly,
Cliff Kelly sat in your chair 3 weeks ago and said that I believe if they did not have blacks did not have 20 or 21 awards, they were definitely going to court.
That's an intriguing thing because Cliff Kelly was supposed to be one of 10 aldermen to sign an alternative map as part of a court challenge to an ordinance that raised the number required for an alternative map to 17, and Cliff Kelly didn't sign that map, and because Cliff Kelly and Alderman Niall Sherman didn't sign the map, the challenge failed, but there's still talk of going to the federal court and waging a civil rights suit on the grounds that there's 40% black population in the city, so 40% of the wards should show reasonable expectation of electing black aldermen. I think that probably will fail because the fact of the matter is that even in Chicago, where there's been a tradition of racial separation, there is enough integration so that it would be hard to draw wards that would parallel the racial figures exactly.
Jack, you brought up the subject of the wards and we alluded to black representation. I'd like to just take that moment to follow up on a question, then we'll give you the last word. An integral part, at least it seems to me, of Mayor Byrne's reelection plan from day one has always been to solidify her support in the Latino community. This past week, Chicago ended up with its first Latin alderman, the 31st Ward, Joseph Martinez, the new alderman replacing Cuda, who went over to Streets and Sanitation. Yet, although she named her first Latino to serve in the city council, the Puerto Rican community is up in arms over that appointment.
Let me take issue with that. I saw television reports last night, and all I saw was Jorge Morales and a few people in his organization were up in arms. There was about 12 people in a room, and they didn't like it. I think that there were many prominent leaders in the community who applauded the move. The president of the Puerto Rican Congress was on television. He said it was a great move. I don't think that you can say that the community is up in arms or that even that a substantial number of leaders are.
So you think it's a very popular move? That's what you're maintaining.
I think that the appointee was well qualified. It certainly is a step in the right direction, and I don't see that any. I'm taking issue with your statement that the community is up in arms. A few people who
the ones that made it on television are up in arms.
Yeah, they're right. I mean,
I would say this, that I would bet right now that Joseph A. Martinez will be elected alderman of the 31st Ward in 1983. That's a very strong organization ward, and he's an organization Democrat.
His name will be Jose when he runs, though.
Yeah, I understand that he prefers to be called that now, although his resume reads Joseph, and so does the door on his law office. But I think Mayor Byrne did what organization mayors have done always. She appointed an organization Democrat. In that ward, there are two rival leaders, and she took the advice of one, Tom Keene, over another, Ed Nedza, but he is an organization Democrat, and he is, as Paul said, he's a seemingly well-qualified guy in the respect that he's a lawyer, well-educated, articulate, and so on.
Richard, last word to you.
Yes, I would like to ask a general question. It seemed to me that the Republican Party had complete control over redistricting, assembly, congressional. What happened?
Well, they didn't have control of the Illinois Senate, so the bill that passed the House never made it through the Senate. Yeah. And that's why it had to go to the conference.
I must say, they're asking the same question. I think they're a little dazed as to what happened. I think what happened was they lost the coin tossed the lottery on, and they lost the tiebreaker on the commission that drew the state legislative map, and the Democrats drew a very skillful map. And then the court, with two Republican members on a three-judge panel, a federal court, chose a Democratic map. So they just couldn't win this year.
It was a bad year.
No, but
sort of like Notre Dame. They just, you know, can't win the big ones.
They fail like they always
right.
do, unfortunately.
We got to move on, okay?
Okay.
Thanks very much. One further question on the, you know, my suggestion that, or my observation that the Latino vote is an integral part of the reelection strategy of Mayor Byrne. I have said on this program in a number of discussions, you have not been here, but I want to put it to you directly. It's my belief that Mayor Byrne really does not care that much for the black vote, and the coalition that she's putting together is whites and Latinos. And if she picks up black votes, that's fine, and if not, she's not playing to black voters.
Let me say this, that she's not playing to anyone. She refuses to do anything strictly for effect. To say that any group is being written off is just simply not true. And it's also, I mean, as far as the Latino vote is concerned, it's very important. Nobody can run for office in Chicago and ignore this important group of people. At the same token, no responsible leader can ignore their concerns, and she has acted in that way.
As a political strategist, is the Latino vote, in your mind, are you more confident that you'd be able to hold the Latino vote than you would the black vote?
No. The Latino vote is very hard to predict. As you know, there's very much a lack of unity. There's a lack of habit of voting. There's a lack of registering for voting. And it's very difficult to predict any election on the basis of a Latino vote. But with regard to the black vote, it's very interesting that the mayor has always been extremely popular among blacks in Chicago, even though some of the so-called leaders jump up and down and they make a lot of noise, one thing or another. Our latest poll shows her support among blacks at 67%. A Chicago Magazine poll that just came out a few days ago shows it at 61%. And this is typical, and it has been continuing.
I just on the Hispanic question, I think that the Hispanic community is at a level of political development that's 20-25 years before the black level of development now, and that it's a controlled vote, and that if the organization in those wards are supporting Jane Byrne, that she'll have the Hispanic vote.
Let's go back to calls. Jerry, you're on the air.
Okay. How come that David... this I'd like to direct to David Axelrod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How come the Tribune is always trying to smear people? Why don't they put the name of the person that does the writing or who gives the damaging results on people? Some innocent people are getting badly hurt because what they are is rumor mongers spreading the information for that peddler.
Can you be more specific? I mean, most of the things that I read in the Tribune and the Sun-Times and Chicago Magazine have a name attached to it.
Yeah, what do you mean, sir?
What I mean is, whenever they put a name like, say, there's your name, Mr. McGrath, somebody puts that in. Why isn't that...
Gold, Plunkett, or Sneed. So you got to figure out, well, it isn't Aaron Gold because it didn't happen at Arnie's.
Well, no, I think the man is right. It's a blind item.
It's a blind item, but you made the point at the beginning of the program that you think it's Mike Sneed because she's married to Bill
Griffin.
How do you know that Aaron Gold didn't come up with this
item? I question the source, but I think what the man is talking about is attribution, and in this case it's a blind item.
Yeah, although I must say, sir, that gossip columns in both papers print items like that all the time, and you know, I've heard this question asked. In fact, I heard a flurry of questions like this when the Sun-Times did their big... I guess they called it an expose on Cardinal Cody earlier in the year, and there are a lot of people irate about that. Newspapers investigate. Newspapers look into these things, and sometimes in order to bring things to people's attention, newspapers have to secure or protect people's privacy, confidentiality, and that's a common practice on both sides of the street.
Okay, we've got to move on. Good evening, Gloria. You're on the air at 372-0500.
Good evening, Bruce. This is my first time calling in.
Good, thank you.
And as a resident of the Southeast Side, I would like to say that I was one of the people who championed Jane Byrne the first time. However, in view of some of the things that she has done in the past couple of years, I and a lot of other people I know will not be voting for her this time around.
What specific things are you talking about?
The way she has, number one, gerrymandered the wards, her saying one thing today, changing things around, saying something else tomorrow. It just seems that you can't believe anything that this woman says. She has been very erratic. I think that she is doing exactly what she said she wouldn't do with the evil cabal. She has the same political, hacks, the same people that she said she would not have, the people that the politicians that the people didn't trust in the first place.
Gloria, you mentioned were talking about perception, and you mentioned the word erratic. That was a word that you heard frequently about a year ago in describing Jane Byrne. It was mentioned frequently in the news media, on radio, and specifically radio shows. I want to turn to Paul and find out, in the polling that you have done, you mentioned that her rating is very high now. When did use of that term start fading away from Jane Byrne? And do you agree that a year ago that was a popular,
yes,
and perhaps accurate perception of Jane Byrne?
It has faded away all this year. And I think that if you closely analyze the events of this year, you will see that her style, if you want to call it that, has undergone a change. It's just not the same as last year, which was a big, heavy political year and so forth.
Okay, we'll give you one further comment, and then we've got to move on.
Well, I do think that we have a lot of questions about what has happened to money. She's fired people right and left who seem to have been capable people. She brings in one person today, he's out tomorrow, just like Mr. McGrath, and he's back the next day. I don't think that she is to be trusted any longer. And I think that she's going to have quite a surprise when it comes to the vote of many of the minorities.
Okay, thank you very much. As a political strategist, one of the things that you've got to know is the strength and weaknesses of your candidate, and also the candidate who you think is going to run against you. Let's get back to Rich Daley for a moment. As a political strategist, what are the strengths and weaknesses of Richard Daley as a candidate against Jane Byrne?
Well, I think his strength is essentially one thing. He has a very famous name. I think he has approximately a similar constituency that his father had, which is lower middle class whites and middle class blacks. It's a difficult thing to sustain the two constituencies, as we could see. We could get a little glimpse at the racial trouble that he had at the school in the 11th ward recently. You could see that Pat Ewells, the alderman, took a role in that situation, and it's a no-win situation where you're bound to disturb either one side or the other.
Do you think those two schools were singled out for a specific reason, as some in Bridgeport suggest?
No, I don't think that was set
up by the board through the urging of the mayor's office?
No, I don't think anybody would want to do a thing like that. I don't think anybody...
Surely not for political purposes.
No, and I don't think you could do
not
it.
Not in Chicago.
I don't think that you could carry off an elaborate conspiracy of that nature. I don't think Ruth Love, the school superintendent, would for an instant allow anything like that. And so I think that that's just some kind of paranoia.
Okay.
I think another weakness that he has is that the independents, he's trying very hard to get support among independents. The independents did not vote for him in his last election. The 43rd ward, for instance, was the lowest ward in the city. He only got 35% of the vote. So he's now attempting to have another constituency. Now, his basic constituency is among regular Democratic voters, and he's now attempting to jump to get a constituency among independents. I think there, again, that's a weakness. It's going to be very difficult to hold all these varying constituencies.
What about Adlai Stevenson? He, in the past, has been able to hold a similar coalition together. Maybe not as strong in a working class area, but they traditionally have voted for the name of Stevenson. Is there not a similarity in that same coalition that all Democrats have.
Well, I'm not... No, it's not the same. For one thing, one of the big differences is that Stevenson has always been popular among the independents. So it isn't the same. I'm really not intimately familiar with Stevenson's constituencies, so I couldn't really
On
respond.
That question of independents versus regulars, I think perhaps a more... independents and regulars and Daley support, a more instructive example would have been the primary, the Burke-Daley primary. And, of course, Daley did very well among independents in that particular primary, which should be some pause, give some pause for concern among Burns people. And I think that from the Daley standpoint, his strategy, I don't know whether it'll work or not, but his strategy is to present an image of a guy who's serious, who does his work, who doesn't get involved in petty political feuding. He's trying to construct an image as state's attorney as a guy who's sort of a good government guy, because they think that that's what's going to appeal to people after 4 years of Jane Byrne.
One of the key things that caught the media's eye with Jane Byrne when she originally decided to challenge Michael Bolandic was the fact that she was in office. She got kicked out and was handled very poorly by Mayor Bolandic. She came back. She was always the underdog. She was fighting. She had been on the inside. She knew where the bodies were buried. She had nothing to lose, and she ripped Michael Bolandic apart in the campaign. I want to ask you about a rumor that I heard last week, that the Republicans are considering running Joseph D. Leonardi, the former police chief, as their candidate against Mayor Byrne. You have the exact same dynamics that you had on the reverse side when you were working for Jane Byrne. Would a Joseph D. Leonardi candidacy by the Republican Party scare you?
Well, at this moment, I would not say that that it's the exact same dynamics at all.
Well, there's no snow.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think that's a scary prospect. I think it's a rather good one.
You'd like that. David, have you heard that rumor?
Well, I haven't heard that. In fact, someone was trying to peddle a Brzezek for mayor rumor to me today. I mean, there are lots of rumors around. One of them was that Bolandic was being talked to by Republicans about running for mayor. And the other is that Daley will run as an independent and bypass the primary and try and have some sort of fusion candidacy. I think that Joe DeLeonardi thing is nonsense. Joe DeLeonardi is at this point, sadly, I think, a broken man. I think they have him as a night watch commander somewhere, and he doesn't show any inclination to fight about that. And I don't think it's a parallel situation at all.
Okay. David, good evening. You're on the air.
Yes. Is this Bruce?
Yes, it is.
Yes, Bruce, first of all, I'd like to say I couldn't agree more with your last caller. I believe her name was Gloria.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, you did ask for an opinion regarding this accounting firm of Horvath, yeah, and so on. I'm not even familiar with
Laventhal and Horvath.
Laventhal and Horvath. Well, you know, for your astute political commentators there, is there a gentleman from the newspaper or from the Tribune?
Yes, yeah. David mm-hmm. McGrath. David Axelrod, I'm sorry.
Oh, Dave Axelrod. Okay. Right. Well, you know, both to him and Mr. McGrath, I would just like to say that, you know, here's a little hot poll from the people, okay? You know, we all didn't come down in the last snowfall, and nobody's buying it. You know, it's very obvious, it's patently obvious that, you know, with a big contribution to City Hall, it's business as usual. You know, you get the contracts. That's my only comment. You asked for a comment from the people as to how they felt about this, and I just like to fill
okay.
that point.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Jim, good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to suggest a candidate for mayor for the next primary. He's on your show. His name is Paul McGrath, and I'll tell you why.
Uh-oh.
He has the two most important...
It's going to be another item in ink tomorrow.
He has the two most important criteria for mayor in Chicago. The first is high humor. And I'll answer David Axelrod's question. Of course there's a relationship between campaign contributions to Mayor Byrne and the contracts that are awarded. If he doesn't believe that, he's funny. That's high humor. The second is that from the beginning of the program, he's managed to talk out of both sides of his mouth extremely effectively, insisting that there's no conflict of interest between him and his wife, but insisting that there's one between a Tribune columnist and someone in a public relations department. So, Paul McGrath, congratulations. congratulations.
All right, let's let Paul. Let's let Paul respond to you, Jim.
Or declare for mayor.
Don't run away. We may have a news item here with 3 minutes to go.
All I can say is, as I said before, if you examine the situations, you could say that there are some similarities. But I think if you examine the situation, you see that they're vastly, vastly different.
Mayor Burr thought there were similarities when she was campaigning, that if you gave money to a mayor and that the person got contracts, that was a little bit suspicious. But somehow now she doesn't think that it is. Well, even if there's not that relationship, it sure looks like it, and she's the one who said it first.
You see, for instance...
Can you deny that?
Let me stick to the question that you asked me about myself. No one objected when Mike Sneed was a reporter for the Tribune and her husband worked in government. As a matter of fact, when Mike Sneed had been the press secretary of the mayor, when she returned to the Tribune, there, as I understand it, there was an arrangement, a ruling made by the management that she should not cover city politics precisely because there would be a conflict of interest, and they recognized it at that time. And I would say that whatever anyone wants to discuss in detail about my relationships, I'm extremely proud of my integrity and my honesty, and I'd be glad to discuss it. But even if you were to say that I was a rogue and I was no good, two wrongs don't make a right.
Okay, on that note, we are out of time. Our guest this evening, Paul McGrath, political advisor to Mayor Jane Byrne, where he is busy working on her re-election bid. Coming up, he is also a former Chicago Sun-Times reporter who helped mastermind Jane Byrne's upset victory over Michael Blandick, and he is also a former columnist for Chicago Magazine. Political reporter David Axelrod of the Chicago Tribune has joined us. He is host of Talking Headlines Sunday nights on WXRT. I'm Bruce Dumont. I thank you very much for joining us. Paul, I hope that you'll come back and visit us many, many times between now and Election Day, and I would hope that maybe someday the mayor will stop over here. She's promised a number of times to be a guest on this program, and she never has shown up. Thanks very much. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll see you next Thursday night at 7 o'clock.